everybody. Stephen Clyde here. It's been an absolute pleasure to be a part of the Mises Caucus the past few months here. So me and Mike are going to have a little conversation here and just go over some goals. We're going to go over the content that we're going to be putting up throughout the year. And then lastly, we're going to finish off by talking about why you should care, because you can make a change. You just got to realize what we're doing here, what our principles are here. So I'm going to start off with Mike. I'm going to start off with goals. We're going to talk about what we're trying to do here. We're trying to revitalize the RP revolution. Most of you got into this movement with Ron Paul. We're talking about local elections, local bills, how to get involved. So I'm going to pass it off to Mike.
Thanks, Steve. So yeah, most people probably know of the caucus because of the chairs race last year, and we gained a lot of ground through that. And I think there was some sense of from some people that it was a disappointment, which I never understood. But fact of the matter is that we helped to get three people elected to the Libertarian National Committee within like 8 months of our existence. We went from idea to, you know, electing three people to the LNC within 8 months with, little organization or tools that we were using. So huge grassroots movement there. And we wanted to keep it going. So we've been greatly expanding the scope of what we're trying to do and implementing the next phases of it. So essentially there's three main things that we want to do with the caucus, and that is content, political action, and affecting the party itself. So we've got content running, thanks to you. I guess I'll take this opportunity to tell your audience that you are now the editor-in-chief of the Mises Caucus. And so the point of the content is to interface with the Libertarian community and the Libertarian Party community and get our principles out there and keep that at the forefront and keep the debate of those principles at the forefront and in people's minds and in people's conversations, so that people know what we're trying to do with the Libertarian Party, what direction we're trying to steer the party, and what principles and actions we're keeping forward.
And maybe, maybe something to tackle first real quick is the idea that, you know, me and you are anarcho-capitalists, but there's this big notion that if you're an anarchist, you can't be involved in politics. Like, you can't play that game. I mean, I think what we're going for is you've got to be principled, but, you know, still pragmatic in the sense that you got to do something. I mean, you can't just sit back and play video game and say, okay, I'm just not going to get involved. So how do you tackle that real quick?
Well, I think the Lysander Spooner defense argument is pretty adequate here. I think it's very, what is the dictates of democracy if not an attack? You know, I mean, democracy is dictating that your taxes are increased or your rights are reduced or whatever. So why not try to fight back against that? Now, people might say, oh, well, you're legitimizing the government. You're legitimizing the use of force. You're legitimizing the state. I don't think that's accurate because the government doesn't run off of your legitimacy. It doesn't need your legitimacy. In fact, it already doesn't have the legitimacy from most people. Most people don't vote. And yet, government's not going away, and they're still taking more of our rights. There's still more inflation. There's still all these things. So it runs off force. It doesn't run off of your legitimacy. It runs off force. And I think a lot of people don't want to realize that we have masters. You know what I mean? Because that's what anarchy is. I've kind of maintained this idea for a long time that while, yeah, I'm philosophically an anarcho-capitalist, and that's the direction I want everything to head. It's kind of anarchism is kind of an oxymoron in our current society, because anarchism is a Greek word for without rulers. Well, we have rulers, and it doesn't matter if you understand that they're illegitimate. It doesn't matter if you know the taxation and stuff. It doesn't matter if you've read all of Rothbard's work. You still have rulers, and they still will punish you if you break their dictates. And there's nothing you can do that will make that not a fact. You might get away with it, even though it's, you know, your actions might not be harming anybody, but you're still have that target on your back, and that's what we have to remove. So society is right now, because that system is in place, is under a systemic duress situation that we have to navigate and deal with in our pursuit of anarcho-capitalist principles.
Right. I think a lot of people misunderstand the idea that it's about long-term goals. Like, our long-term goal is zero government, but, you know, we're still working towards three functions of government if that's what the anarchists want. I mean, we can decide when we get to three if we want less than that. But you have to have an ultimate goal. If your ultimate goal is only three, five, 10 functions, Well, it's kind of hard to go backwards from that, because you'll be able to, you'll be conceding to a lot of different things that get added to the government, like regulations or whatever it may be. So it's just about the ultimate goal. But, you know, Murray Rothbard would be right in line with Milton Friedman saying, take any tax cut you can get, of course. But the goal, the ultimate goal is zero taxes. And without an ultimate goal, you're kind of, you know, wandering
around aimlessly.
Exactly. All right. Yeah. So that was just a quick point I wanted to make. And I guess you're going to get into local elections, local bills, because we got a lot going on right now. It's going to be good
news. Yeah. And just as an aside to that previous point, there was one poll taken in the caucus about, you know, are you an anarchist and a minarchist? And that revealed that it's roughly 60-40 in the group, about 60% anarchist and about 40% minarchist, which to me is great. I mean, it's pretty even, or it's pretty close to even, and we have found a way to bridge the gap between the two. So, and people are working together, so that's great. Now, as far as the vision of the Mises Caucus and why political action, like what kind of political action in particular that we're advocating, it's radical yet realistic is kind of the way I look at it. It's just, it's going to require us as libertarians to pare down our the scope of where we're looking to change. So if you're looking to change the president, if you're looking to win the presidency, the Libertarian Party is probably not going to be a viable option. That's just a fact. I think that the aim there should be more to get a principled person in the debates so that they could say libertarian things on TV the way Ron Paul did, more than victory. But and that might even be the case at the state level too. In fact, that is the case at the state level. However, there is options for people who want to go those routes. Young American for Liberty just got 37 essentially libertarian rhinos elected to state government. But what we want to do is kind of work synergistically with Young Americans for Liberty. So our focus is going to be twofold: local level elections and ballot initiatives. Local level elections, because that's where we win. In fact, the Libertarian Party actually got have more libertarians elected now than prior to 2018. And yet somehow 2018 is considered a disappointment because our high profile races, you know, didn't do as well as we would have hoped. But there's still cause for optimism there. It's just picking your battles and picking where we go. So and we had a major victory on the local election front. Jeff Hewitt is now a county commissioner, a county supervisor in Riverwood County, California, which is the 11th most populated county in the entire country. It's more populated than the state of New Jersey. It's got a $5.5 billion budget. You know, that's major, but it's still technically local, but that's where we won. And that's where we win all of our races.
Yeah. And the media is able to warp our perspective on all this. For example, everybody thought Larry Sharp was going to do better than he did. And I think at the last moment, the media had so many different stories running that people felt they had to go Republican or Democrat because they thought they had too much to lose. So the media can definitely warp your perspective, but there's a lot of things going on right now. For example, maybe you could talk about the decriminalization bills that are in place right now.
So yeah, and that goes in with the ballot initiative thing. So local level elections, that's kind of basic enough. You know, a big goal that I would like to get in 2019, because there is local level elections across the country, is I would really like to take a local government, like get majority on a local government with libertarians and see what we can do there. But the other side of it is ballot initiatives. And I think this is as we explore this, is where we're going to start to really get hope from people and optimism from people, because there's so much that's possible there. So a good example would be in Denver, Colorado, where you are. There is an organization called Decriminalize Denver that has been run and organized mostly by Democrats. And their goal is, they were starting a ballot initiative, which is, for people that don't know or never heard of a ballot initiative, what that is basically you're trying to get something on the ballot for the voters. So in this case, when you go to elections, like, I don't know what elections you have in Denver in 2019, let's say it's just local level elections, you'll be able to go there and vote for your city council. But then if this initiative passes, you'll also have the option to pass or decline the initiative on the ballot. So what this one is about is decriminalizing psilocybin mushrooms, all the way down to like removing any money for enforcing that law or anything. And when I connected with the guy's name is Kevin Matthews, he's the director of Decriminalize Denver. He told me that was the first libertarian to reach out to him in this effort. And I was really disappointed by that. So We ended up getting him on the Tom Woods Show, on Lions of Liberty, on Mance Radner's podcast. And then we, one of our members got him in front of the Libertarian Party of Colorado, who then passed a resolution to support it. And then they recruited several petitioners from the Libertarian Party. So now you have libertarians going out and talking to people and getting petitions. Well, guess what? They just turned in the petitions. They got 4,000 over the requirement. It's polling at 40%, over 40% with about 20% undecided, meaning it's likely to win, or it's likely to pass, meaning shrooms are likely to be decriminalized in Denver in 2019. And now libertarians have their fingerprints on that to some extent.
Let me just throw in a quick story real quick. I forget which TED Talk it was, but you had a guy giving a TED Talk and he asked two questions. The first question was, how many of y'all in the audience think you're politically informed? Almost everybody raised their hand. The second question was, what was the last piece of legislation that was passed in your state? Almost no one raised their hand. So I think what we're trying to change here is the idea that local elections don't matter. I mean, local elections are probably the most important thing we can do as libertarians, because like you said, the big talking point against libertarians is, oh, okay, let's get 3% of the vote again. I mean, if we can at least focus on local elections, at least get our name out there, at least get people to realize, you know, we're not anti-Semitic, we're not Nazis. That's a lot of the things you hear nowadays. So we need to focus on local. I think that's been the most promising thing.
Right. And not only is it one of the most powerful, but it's also the most effective. So now, especially on this ballot initiative thing, now I'll share a story with you that I experienced on election day in 2018. I went to my local polling place. Now, I live in a district that is over 70% Democrat. And on top of that, we have straight party voting here. So you can just hit Democrat or hit Republican and walk out. So, you know, most people are going to go to the polls, I think, knowing what they want to do. So, sure, I was there. And while people were on the way in, I was giving them materials for our candidates, materials for the party. And I was able to get rid of them. But, you know, people weren't necessarily having deep conversations with me. And, you know, I didn't get the impression that I changed their vote on the way in, you know. But on the way out, it was a completely different story. On the way out, I tried to hit them with something else. I hit them with the candidates on the way in. On the way out, I said, hey, what do you think about reducing the penalties for marijuana possession here in Norristown? And all these people who did not take literature from me on the way in suddenly were giving me their emails and saying, yeah, let me know. Like, let's go to city council. Let's socially support for this. So the point is that people might be ready to, are ready to jump on for issues that are libertarian where their party is not doing it, while they might not be willing to walk away from their in-group or their party or whatever. Right. So we have to leverage that. And then this will give us position to do something for the people who will then be more likely to listen to us. And all of a sudden, libertarianism is not a taboo. It's something that they can identify with on a tangible level.
Yeah, and we talked about this last time. It's very, very difficult to have a conversation with somebody if you hate them and they hate you just off right off the bat. But if you can get someone laughing, if you can find some agreeance in some area, it opens up the door for a conversation. And that, you know, I'm against the left. I'm also against the right. But we need to have conversations with people and just really try to actually do something, because otherwise our freedoms are just going down the drain. Once the idea of liberty is gone, it's really hard to revive. I mean, that's exactly what Ron Paul talked about. Once ideas spread, they can't be stopped by any army or any government. But once ideas die, they tend to die pretty quickly.
Yeah, and people would be surprised at how effective this can really be. I mean, I've only been living here in Norristown for about 4 months now. And about 2 months ago, I went to my first city council meeting. And I just walked up to, and the chief of police happened to be there and you know, listening and everything. And afterward, I just said, you know, screw it. And I walked up to him and asked him and said, hey, what is the state of marijuana decriminalization around here? And he said, you know what? I don't know, but it's time. And started going on this rant about how it should be decriminalized. I said, the chief of police. I didn't expect that, you know? Yeah. And so now I have great optimism going into the spring that we're going to get this done. So now the big picture here is essentially what we're talking about is issue-based coalitions. And I think that's really important for libertarians to do, because you don't have to, you can work with groups that are different from you. You can work with Democrats, you can work with Republicans, and nobody has to concede anything. Right. So you work with Democrats on, say, psilocybin or something like that, and you come together in good faith as different groups who accept each other's differences and cast that aside. You know, I'm not trying to make you a libertarian. You're not trying to make me a Democrat. I'm not trying to make you a capitalist. You're not trying to make me a socialist or whatever your problem is. And So then you start to get results from that. Now, like I said earlier, now when I say that this is radical yet realistic, here's where the radical part starts to come into play. The ultimate enemy here is the federal government. Let me ask you, what do you think is the most realistic weapon that we can use against them?
Probably localization, local elections, local anything, because I mean, even minarchists talk about how things should be done as locally as possible. That's kind of the point. And maybe you can bring Michael Bolton into the situation, because if you don't know Michael Bolton, he's one of the greatest guys you'll ever meet. Super nice. And he was the founder of the 10th Amendment Center. So that's 10th Amendments for States' Rights.
We actually are going to be partnering with Michael Bolton. I mean, he gave me his word that he's going to do this. So I'll go ahead and say it. He's actually going to be making some tutorial guides and training guides for us on how to introduce a resolution or an initiative, you know, how to get it started, only 36 states allow ballot initiatives. So in the other states, you're just going to have to convince city council to pass something or to introduce something. So how to do that, how to get something introduced at the state level, or an initiative at the state level. But I'm thinking I'm thinking bigger than just local here, in that, like I said, Young Americans for Liberty is focusing on state level races. Okay. And they just got 37 libertarians essentially elected to state government. So let's just say that they're going to continue to grow and they're going to continue to succeed. Let's also say that the Mises Caucus and the party, generally speaking, is going to focus on local level elections, spread out there in ballot initiatives. And let's say we're going to grow. The two of them working synergistically together paves the way to use the state to nullify the feds and ultimately possibly even succeed from the feds. That's the big picture here. It's just going to take some time. We're not going to win the presidency and undo the $21 trillion debt and undo the Fed. No, but maybe we can audit one, you know, maybe here in Pennsylvania, we could audit the Federal Reserve in Philly. Maybe we could, here in Pennsylvania say, hey, your unconstitutional income tax is not happening here anymore. Who knows? Yeah. It's going to take some time, but you can do it. And in the meantime, you're making things more free where you live, and influencing the people who are politically involved around you and showing you that you do work, you do are effective, and providing a service to the people who benefit from that increased freedom.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, the radical libertarians like us, we're against monopolies in general, but you'd rather have a state monopoly versus a federal government monopoly where they're having power over every single state. I mean, at least let people within their own states decide what they want to do. And then from there, you can start breaking it down the cities and then towns and then your neighborhoods. And that's exactly how Murray Rothbard put it. Why not give the freedom down to the last individual? And that's the ultimate goal.
So
go ahead.
I'll be the alarmist here. The reason what made me think of all of this and put the dots together, you know, with us and Young Americans for Liberty and all of that sort of thing, is because we're not going to save the feds. We're not going to reverse this $22 trillion debt. That's going to continue to happening. That debt's going to continue to grow. The inflation's going to continue to grow. And eventually there's going to be some kind of dollar/economic crisis. Like, we all believe that, right? But think about what that really means if you actually believe that. Like, what is actually going to happen? In my opinion, if that happens, the people who are going to hurt the most are the people who are dependents, the people on welfare, the people on food stamps, people in the cities. And what's going to happen? They're going to freak out. They're going to demand all their stuff. They're going to riot. They're going to do whatever. And then the political class is going to capitalize on that and use that to say, look at how capitalism has failed. Look how free markets have failed. This is horrible. We need our new system, whatever that might be.
Exactly. But the goal is always to put people in a position where they need to ask for help. And that's kind of why we're back to localization, that if you do things on a local level, let me just give an example. I read an article today that people were in the Shiloh National Park. I forget where that is. And the park ranger was saying, hey, you need to sign a waiver before you can clean up here. They were cleaning up trash. And the waiver was, I guess, so you don't hurt yourself cleaning up trash. The government wants you to be dependent on them. It's not as if you have to be dependent on them. The scariest thing for the politician who wants to control your life is to tell them that you don't need them. That's their absolute worst fear. So we've gone on for a few minutes here. So that's the goal part. We want to do things locally. We want to get people motivated again. We want to revitalize the Ron Paul revolution. Talk about content for a few minutes here. So we're always looking for writers. If you're a decent writer, just send out a sample article to me at sclibertyprotonmail.com. I'll read it. There's a lot of talent out there. There's a lot of people who have our goals, but just aren't involved with anything right now. So we want to do that. We want to give you incentives to write. Going forward, we want to try to offer money for articles, even if it's a dollar an article at first. We want to try to do something. And later on, once we get going, once we get our merch store set up, and we want to do merch, by the way, once we get a lot of things set up, we can offer a lot more incentives to write for us. So hopefully that'll incentivize you all to reach out to me. I'm the editor for Mises Caucus, and me and Mike have been working hard the past 2 weeks just trying to get the website set up. It is tough to actually do this. It takes a lot of time. So we need more people to be involved so we can actually get some sleep every once in a while. So what we want out of the writers is just, you know, if you hold our positions that the government shouldn't play a big role in your life or any role at all, then you're probably for us. Just if you're a fan of the Mises Institute, which we definitely are, reach out to us. Just send us an email. You'd be amazed the opportunities that can come to you if you just reach out to somebody. So that's my short little rant there. Why should you care? Why was it that Ron Paul was so influential? Why is it that Jordan Peterson is so influential nowadays? So I guess we can just go back and forth to kind of wrap up, Mike.
Well, part of it is the consistency. Both of them have been very, very consistent for a very long time. And that gives an air of trust, you know, and you can't buy that kind of thing. You can't buy trust, you know, and you can't buy sincerity. You can't buy that feeling that you actually trust that somebody is honest and sincere in what they're saying. But they really are out there speaking truth to power when the stakes to do so are very high. You know, Ron Paul was cheated out of the nomination. You know, Jordan Peterson just got rid of his Patreon today, which is making him like six figures a year, maybe more. You know, these people are really putting it on the line. But and in the case of Ron Paul, you know, he was able to get on TV and make absolute fools of all of these establishment hacks in the Republican Party. And you know, when that whole thing was going on, you know, even people who were non-libertarians found themselves saying, everything that guy just said made sense. Or I agree with everything that guy just said, you know, unless maybe it was foreign policy. But, you know.
I think it was the education aspect too, because when I first listened to Ron Paul, I agreed with like 90% of what he said. Once he started talking about war, I'm just like, oh my God, is he a leftist? What is he talking about? But then I was so interested because I agreed with so much of what he said that I actually went and did some research. I heard him say things like Austrian economics. I'd never heard of that before. I'd never even heard of most branches of economics. Most people don't know anything about economics. So that propelled me to move forward and do some research. He was saying things like the Federal Reserve. I'd never heard of the Federal Reserve. Most people don't know what the Federal Reserve is. If anything, they think it's a private bank. So, ooh, privatization bad. You know, they just don't know where to connect the dots because they've never thought about any of this before. Getting people to actually go out and do some research for the first time might change their life. It might push, you know, a lot of people, they're on a search for truth. They're easily pushed one way or the other. And if they go down the road of socialism, it's really hard to undo that. Just kind of how, like, if you go down the road of anarcho-capitalism, it's kind of hard to give credit to socialism because, well, you start studying history and all that. So I think education is definitely one of the biggest factors. And when I listen to Jordan Peterson, it's the same way. He's obviously very, very honest. He says what he means. And he gets you to think about things in a way that, okay, I'm going to go look up what he said. I'm going to verify what he said. And it's like, okay, what he's saying is true. And what Ron Paul was saying about the Fed, it's very true.
So and they both get to the heart of the matter. Yeah. Like you said, you know, the Fed and the wars and all that and their connection and their effects on the economy and our standards of living and all that stuff. People had never thought about that before. I certainly have not thought of religious concepts in the psychological way that I do now, or the psychological history, psychological evolutionary way that I do now, thanks to Jordan Peterson. So,
you know, whatever topic it is, you know, one, just being curious will open up a lot of doors because a lot of people, they don't really care about politics in the sense that, you know, they're looking for a leader. They care about politics in the sense that they think they need to be politically motivated because, or else, you know, one party is just going to take away your rights or another party is going to take away your rights. I think most people are concerned about that, but you kind of feel like you have to pick and choose. And with libertarians, it is really like a third way. You know, some people think libertarians are, you know, partly left and partly right. And the way Walter Block describes it, he says, no, it's kind of like the third edge in the triangle where we do it in some sense take values from both, but we're a third way. We're not left, we're not right.
Yeah, so I'll wrap up by saying that going back to some of the stuff with the caucus, you know, we're very serious about this. So we already have affected Libertarian Party politics. We created the blockchain committee. We created this coalition group with the decriminalized Denver group. We've got state groups in I think about 40 states. You know, now, so what we're the plan for the end of this month is we are filing as a PAC. You know, we're actually filing as a PAC with the focus on local level elections and ballot initiatives. That's this month. Next month, we'll be implementing our ads and then getting our email machine rolling. That's the most important thing. And, you know, we've been collecting data from people on what state they live in so we can target by state. And so we're going to use the content to roll people in, create a community, show them what we're doing, and then churn them out to the streets to start actually changing things. And like I said, I'm just one person, and it's looking like we're going to be able to decriminalize marijuana here just because I asked the chief of police what he thinks about it, you know, as one person. So it can be done.
Like you said, you're just one guy, and I got to give you some credit here because you're modest. I haven't been with the caucus the whole time you've been started, but you only started, what was it, last year? Or I guess 2019 now, but beginning of 2 years ago?
It started in August of 2017.
That's right.
But like I said, between there,
you've been able to set up so much in just that small amount of time. You're able to set up events. You're able to get all these people involved. When you talk about the membership increases in the LP, I think the Mises Caucus was mostly responsible for that. I'm just saying. So I got to give you some credit for that. You're one of the hardest working guys I know, Mike. So I'm as motivated as you are at this point.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it can be done. That's the most important thing. I mean, you know, and we got the Ron Paul endorsement, which is obviously a great, great honor. You know, Tom Woods has gone to bat for us. All those guys have joined the party. So, like, so much has happened. There's so much energy. And now it's just about taking that energy and focusing it on something and turning it into something positive and productive so that it doesn't burn out. That's where we're at right now.
Yeah, and if anybody goes to our website and finds a little email pop-up we have, you notice I made that little slogan, it's join the revolution, but join is kind of striked out, and it says be the revolution, because you can honestly make a change. I know it sounds corny to say, you know, make a change, but you really can. You just got to try, do something, start a podcast, read some books, reach out to people that you otherwise wouldn't have reached out to, and you'll be amazed at the doors that open to you.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, on that front, I went to one event. I was lucky enough. What started a lot of my networking opportunities is I was invited to go to the Nexus conference, which Nexus is a cryptocurrency. And the father's founder is one of the co-founders of SpaceX. That guy is now a friend of mine, which is amazing to me. You know what I mean?
Pat Burns, and man, you could just go on the connections you've made, and all you're doing is reaching out to people. You know, you're not a superhuman, neither am I. I mean, we just try to do what we can, and little things matter. Now, imagine if everybody did this. That's kind of the point, right? I mean, imagine if just 10 people did this, or 20 people, or 1,000, then 10,000. It's going to have a ripple effect like you couldn't believe.
Absolutely.
All right, so thank you guys so much for listening. Like I said, check out the website. We're going to be putting out content Monday through Friday, probably on the weekends too, but Monday through Friday is going to be our main content. Reach out to us if you want to get involved, please. And you can make a change. So thank you, Mike, for doing all you've done the past few years, and just reach out to us. Thank you guys so much.
LPBC'sCaucus.com.